This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNLive.com today.
The show, everybody. The biggest news happening is a shocker, especially from what we heard the other day, that supposedly this grand jury was going to take a break. No break. Instead, an indictment, a 30-count indictment of the former president, Donald Trump. Donald Trump's New York court date has been set for Tuesday. New York is getting ready for what they fear could be massive protests. So you have every police officer, no matter what their rank, no matter what they do for the NYPD, ordered to have their blues on, and it seems that now the things that were constructed, the barriers outside of the Manhattan courthouse, were necessary. So broadcasting from Miami, you can feel the ripple throughout the country. Lots of people paying attention to, of course, what's happening here. It's something that we didn't expect, I think, because we kept hearing that there was the possibility of it happening, but then we heard the opposite, that there was going to be this break of the grand jury. So now this is what is happening. Let me give you the facts of it so you know. I already mentioned Tuesday. Tuesday is going to be the day that Donald Trump will appear in court, and he is expected, of course, to appear in court. The Manhattan grand jury voted to indict the former president following this long-running investigation, all focused on hush money payments to adult film star Stormy Daniels. We've talked about that ad nauseum. You understand the facts of that. $130,000 happened in 2016. That was during the presidential run. This indictment is the first of criminal indictment of former president that we have ever had in our country. So it's interesting. There are a lot of timelines that will have to happen here, including there's questions about whether or not he can run, and we're going to talk about that in a second. But now with this indictment, what happens now is it's under seal. So the specific charge or charges have not been made public. But we know that the date has been set. We know what the case is about. We know that what happens once he's arrested. Again, that's the fingerprinting. It's all the things that you go through when there is an indictment. So somebody asked me, well, these grand juries, how many people are in the grand jury? So in New York, you've got 23 members of the public that are part of the grand jury in this case. They hear evidence from witnesses presented by prosecutors over a period of days or weeks or months, and we know what happened there. We heard about some of the proceedings that were going on in the courthouse, even though we don't know a lot of the specifics. So at the end of that process, that's what happened. Prosecutors decided to ask the jurors to vote on an indictment, but the majority have to vote to indict the person. So they voted to indict. They voted to indict, once again, I'll repeat that, the former president, Donald Trump. So now that's happening, the prosecutors reached out to the former president's lawyers to ask whether he would voluntarily turn himself in, which we know, again, is on Tuesday. So he's going to avoid the whole handcuffing, being taken into custody in public view thing. Remember, if you go back to March 18th, Trump posted on social media that he would be arrested. And then there was so much conversation about this that it was, that there were so many that said it was unlikely that he would even be publicly arrested because his attorneys were in communication with the prosecutors. So this isn't a shock that he's arranged to surrender, that his lawyers have arranged to do that. So that's how this proceeds. And then we find out more about the charges because, again, once he goes to the first court proceeding, then the process begins. At the arraignment, the judge determines whether, in this case, whether the former president would need to pay bail or adherence to certain restrictions pending a trial, or whether he could be released with no bail or restrictions, which is being released on your personal recognizance. So that's something that'll come in play. Now, the Secret Service is an aspect of this. The Secret Service is preparing for the possibility of that arraignment early next week, and we know it's Tuesday again, as we keep hearing. So the agent in charge of Trump's detail will personally accompany, that's how it would have to play out, Trump when he is processed on the charges, because you have to have the Secret Service there. So now there's so much attention, and it has been focused on the New York County District Attorney Alvin Bragg. Bragg inherited the Trump investigation from his predecessor. And when the predecessor, two senior prosecutors quit their office last year in frustration, I guess, apparently. So they didn't want to pursue the indictment. It's the opposite of Bragg. So could he go to jail? That's another question that I got in the mailbag the other day, which is typical, and it depends. What is he charged with? What for? Is he ultimately convicted? You know, all of that. Charges can be downgraded. Sentences vary case by case. We certainly know that. Then here's the big one that I was also asked several times. Can Trump still run for president in 2024? It's never been attempted by a candidate from a major party before. Trump is allowed to run for president while under indictment, or even if he is convicted of a crime. The practical impact of a criminal case on his candidacy, though, that's the question. Would it help or hurt his odds of landing in the White House again? And you know what? Flip a coin. It depends on who you ask. Some of his advisors, that I read this maybe a couple of weeks ago in the Washington Post, say it's a favorable thing for him because he's in the center of attention as a dominant figure. But then there are pitfalls that could fall along the way to this too, and blow up with all of that. But again, this is kind of trying to, you know, look ahead and look at a crystal ball, and we don't know at this point, because, you know, you have other Republicans who want that nomination. You know, many of them want that nomination. So many are jumping to his defense, and many are calling for people to have cooler heads. Rona McDaniel, the chairwoman of the Republican Party, called the indictment a blatant abuse of power from a DA focused on political vengeance instead of keeping people safe. Meanwhile, top Democrats say the grand jury was following the facts and that Trump should respect the legal system. Nancy Pelosi said the grand jury has acted upon the facts and the law. No one's above the law, and everyone has the right to a trial to prove innocence, and said hopefully the former president will peacefully respect the system which grants him that right. To be sure, we're going to be talking about this a lot, obviously, throughout the coming week, certainly next week, because next week is the big thing, because we'll know more about the specific charges, that kind of thing. But this is a shocker in a sense, because of so much of what was being leaked out that apparently was pretty erroneous. So any headline, anything you read or see is going to have the big, bold statement, Trump indicted. All right, sit back, relax, take a breath. We have some of the best people we've talked to, some of the authors across the world coming up next. You can always email me your thoughts on Trump, Kate at katedelaneyradio.com.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. It's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
Ever feel completely down on your luck, whether it's your career or just your life? Do you look at other people and wonder, why them, not me? I'm Kate Delaney. I did it. I admit it. I've learned some valuable and priceless lessons from some of the rock stars I've interviewed over the years, like Sir Richard Branson or the late, great John Madden, and I want to share them. Want to laugh? Want to learn? Want more out of life? Then pick up a copy of my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary. Get it on Amazon today.
The Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Pauti Arco Super Tea naturally builds good cells and kills bad cells. So it's great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting an infection, diabetes, or cancer. To order, visit drinksupertea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com. 818-965-9113. drinksupertea.com.
Ed Lipinski is in our virtual green room. He has had such an interesting career. He worked in publishing and advertising for over 40 plus years. So in that role, art director, graphic designer, illustrator, writer. What I think is really cool is his ties to the New York Times. He has a book, The New York Times Home Repair Almanac and Tiling the Installation Handbook. I mean, how do you write for the New York Times in the home improvement area? I know growing up in that area, how critical people can be. So to write a column like that for the New York Times would be absolutely amazing. And he's written a novel that we're going to talk about called Werewolf on Madison Avenue. Ed, thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
So you got to tell us the New York Times story. How'd that happen?
Well, After I got out of the Air Force, I was a missile launch officer. I got into the art field, and I was doing illustration. And one of my clients was the New York Times, and I did technical illustration and scientific illustration. And I was illustrating the column for Home Improvement. And all of a sudden, the writer of the column took off. He resigned. He decided he didn't want to do the column, and the New York Times was looking for a writer. Well, when I was in college, I minored in English, so I stepped up to the plate and asked if I could do it because I had a background not only in illustration and art and writing, but I was also involved in the theater, and I was a stage carpenter at one time. So I figured I had enough background that I could do this, so they gave me the chance, and then the rest was history. I was able to do the column for 5 years. The only reason why I'm not doing it now is because the New York Times has gone on hard times, and they're no longer publishing independent columns like the home improvement, chess, photography, and cooking, and so on.
Yeah, but that had to be a fun experience for you, was it?
It was a fun experience, and it was also a learning experience, because even though I had experience in home improvement and industrial carpentry, I realized that when you write about something, you have to be able to tell people how to do it. It's not enough to do it yourself. So all of a sudden, I had found out myself I had to be not just a writer, but also a researcher. So putting together the columns was quite a task. It was enjoyable. But after 5 years, I felt as though we had done everything we could do. So it was just as well that the column terminated.
Yeah. And before we talk about your novel, where you have this really interesting character, Jeff Foxlove, you worked in advertising. So you know what the advertising industry was like and some of the crazy people who really were part of that. You worked on ad campaigns and whatnot. What was that experience like for you?
Well, to tell you the truth, I worked as a freelancer, and I did not work for the big agencies like J. Walter Thompson, Y&R, Doyle Dane, or BBDO. I worked for a lot of the smaller agencies, and when you work for the smaller agencies, they have lesser products. They don't have the big-name products to work with. So these people sometimes got overzealous, and they actually kind of bend the rules of truth a little bit. I didn't work constantly with them. I would come in occasionally, and that gave me a chance to see the world of advertising from an outsider's perspective at the same time by being in it. And so I ran into some rather interesting characters, whom I will not mention, but anyway, for obvious reasons. But anyway, so as I was writing the column for the New York Times, somehow I got the idea of thinking, if I ever sit down to write a novel, I would like to write about advertising, but I would like to put a glitch into it, a twist into it, a little wrinkle, and that was the werewolf idea. So even though I had an experience in advertising, I haven't known many werewolves in my time.
Neither have I. So talk about your book, Werewolf on Madison Avenue. Tell us about the story of Jeff Foxlove and what happens to him.
Well, if you think about the monsters, there are the five big monsters: Dracula, Frankenstein, the werewolf, Invisible Man, and the creature from the Black Lagoon. And all of them, except the werewolf, are full-time monsters. But the werewolf is unusual because he's only a monster one night of the year, one night of the month. That's the night of the full moon. So he can be a monster and also keep his day job. And that's really what this is about. Jeff Foxlove is a young man. He's just out of college, and he wants to get into advertising. And he's read the high-minded end of advertising from Ogilvy's book, The Confessions of an Advertising Man. And he really wants to get into to sell product and to do a good job. Unfortunately, he falls into a lesser advertising agency where the owner of the agency is also the creative director. And there's no bounds to his tastelessness. And so he takes Jeff Foxlove under his wing and makes him a raunchy copywriter. Well, it's all right for a while, but Jeff, on a vacation in the Yucatan, runs into the creature of the night and becomes a werewolf. And he comes back to New York thinking everything is okay again, but then he becomes the werewolf on the night of the full moon. And the next morning he's filled with remorse. He wants to give himself up, but his boss tells him, no, his boss doesn't want to lose a good copywriter. So he tells him, okay, I'll find a way to keep you from going out on the night of the full moon and becoming a predator. Not only does he do that, but he realizes that now that he's got a full-fledged werewolf on his hands, he can use the werewolf to advertise various products, shaving cream, hair, shampoo, and so on. It works for a while, except for one thing. The werewolf, by its very nature, must kill. And so we have to see. The story takes place. It goes on to say, can the werewolf survive as a werewolf and yet still be a copywriter? It goes to an ending, which I think the readers will find very surprising.
Ooh, so it's so interesting because you've combined lots of humor. You have such a great sense of humor. You can see it is certainly weaved in the book, and horror. And it had to be fun for you to write this, was it?
It was fun. It was fun exploring the character and combining the eccentricities of the advertising world with the predatory nature of a true monster and making them come together and then seeing if you could resolve this in a different kind of ending. I might say that I appreciate your comments, and I, of course, think the book is very good, but I'm not the only one. The Seattle Book Review just gave me a 5-star review rating for the book, so it's getting good reviews.
Nice. Will you write another novel?
Yes, I'm in the process. I've just finished another novel called Visions of Destiny, and it's about a man who can see into the future, a very average, ordinary person, but he has the gift of getting glimpses into the future. Now, that might seem like a wonderful gift, but if we remember the mythological legend from Greek mythology of Cassandra, the prophetess of doom, sometimes it turns out badly, and this is the way it turns out for Henry Gainsborough. He has these visions, but when he reveals them, people become very wary and even afraid of him. And he goes through life in this way, and it has another bittersweet ending. The book is in the final editing stage now. I don't expect it to be actually in print until the middle of March.
Nice. Werewolf on Madison Avenue. You can pick that up on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And I would be remiss not to ask you about this, because the Natural History Museum in New York, I think, is one of the great gems in the United States. And you spend time volunteering there. I'm waiting for your dinosaur book to come out. What's that like?
that's a long wait. Yes, I was up at the museum yesterday. I work at the I'm a gallery explainer, and I'm up on the fourth floor, usually on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, sometimes Thursdays in the afternoon. And if you want to know anything about dinosaurs, you can come up and ask me. I won't be able to answer everything about dinosaurs, but I'm fairly fluent, and I've been doing that for over 20 years. But I'm not going to write a book about it. There's too many good books out there by too many authorities. So you'll have to wait for that, unless I can figure out a way of making a fiction book out of it.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. What made you decide to do that? Because obviously you were busy. You had your hands full with everything else you were doing. What made you decide you were going to volunteer, and you've done it now for decades?
Well, yes. What happened was I started as an artist, and I used to go up to the museum. It's a great place to draw the animals because they don't move. And then I felt out. I joined the museum so that I could go there anytime I wanted. And then I got the newsletter, and they were looking for volunteers and to explain dinosaurs. The dinosaurs hall had been closed for a few years where they were renovating it and reorganizing it. So they opened it up again, and they were looking for volunteers to explain dinosaurs. And I thought that might be interesting, just to volunteer to do something. I'm not very good at volunteering, like in a hospital or something like that. But it might be something to bring my talents, however limited they are, to useful purposes. And so that's what I did. I've been volunteering, I've been doing it, and I really like it. The museum is a wonderful place to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Ed Lipinski, Werewolf on Madison Avenue, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you very much for inviting me. It's my pleasure, I assure you.
All right, so interesting his story. I really, really like the idea of what he did, as I go back to the book, Werewolf on Madison Avenue, of talking about werewolves and in the cutthroat world of advertising and combining that. There really is a lot of humor weaved in this, and his main character, Jeff Foxlove, is fascinating. So thanks to Ed for coming on the show and all of you for listening to this version of it.
Jimmy, turn off the video games. Let's go play some ball.
I'm in the middle of my game. Can't we go later?
Come on, it'll be fun. It will be there when you get back.
Okay, but there's no way you're gonna win.
Why don't you grab some water and granola bars, and then we'll see about that.
You can make a difference. Eat smart, play hard. And when you do, your kids will too. A challenge from USDA.
We all have heard about the benefits of fish oils, but what about the presence of heavy metals, PCBs, dioxins, furans, and other contaminants found in fatty tissues of fish? GCNteam.com recognizes this risk and offers IFOS certified tested omega-3 fatty acids. EPA, DHA insist on IFOS omega-3 fatty acid certification. Get the best at GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
You USA News update. The court proceedings concerning former President Trump's attempt to have his Georgia election interference case dismissed on First Amendment grounds have ended. Trump's chief attorney contended in court Thursday that the indictment should be dismissed because the actions taken by the former president regarding the 2020 election constituted political speech and advocacy. Next month, the House will send the impeachment articles against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas to the Senate. Last month, House Republicans impeached Mayorkas over his management of the U.S.-Mexico border situation. A federal judge Thursday sentenced Sam Bankman-Fried to 25 years in prison for his leading role in one of the biggest financial scandals in American history, capping the stunning fall of the former cryptocurrency magnate and one-time Washington mega donor. The judge handing down the sentence almost 5 months after a jury found Bankman-Fried guilty. John Schaefer, USA News.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few highlights. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I have been using Extendivite for many years. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Advertising is simple. It starts with someone who has a need.
Mom!
And then gets more specific.
Mom, I want pizza.
Then we add urgency.
I want pizza tonight.
Before you know it, your GCN advertising message is reaching millions of listeners. Listeners who are definitely in need.
We want pizza!
You see, advertising on GCN is simple. Your message meets their need, and the result means new business for you. Tell us about your business, then let our super creative department go to work to craft just the right message to feed those who have an urgent need.
We want pizza tonight!
GCN has the most affordable national radio advertising rates, period. And millions of people listen to GCN radio programs on over 1,000 AM and FM and XM stations and streaming audio live. Get started today with GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. Just shoot us an email, advertise@gcnlive.com.
Welcome to America Tonight, Lee Halverson. His book is called Cong Catchers, A Soldier's Memories of Vietnam. Boy, do we have a fascinating off-air conversation. His book is a long, interesting, amazing read. It will take you on quite a journey. There's no question about it. And his life, I think, has been that kind of a ride. Lee, thanks for hopping on with us.
You're welcome.
So in Vietnam, at Vietnam, you were a dog handler. But before we get to that and what that was like and what you had to do around the perimeters and some of the fascinating stories that happened and some of the things you and your men did to actually help some children in Vietnam and you cared about the people, before we go down that road, what was your road to going to Vietnam? Because you got married and then what happened?
Well, 2 weeks after we were married, I was sent to Vietnam. I'm not sure I'm answering your question.
Yeah, you are answering the question. So you're just married 2 weeks, and
yes,
you should be enjoying your honeymoon and whatnot. And then all of a sudden, boom, you go. And how did your wife feel about that? Ginny, how'd she feel?
Well, the high spot of that is we never had a single argument our first year of marriage. But as far as Jenny is concerned, she had just graduated from Iowa State with a degree in English and speech. She interviewed at least 20 schools to get a job. and her interviews went well. The school board hesitated in every case about hiring her because she was married to a soldier. And they figured when I got back from Vietnam, I would swoop her away and go elsewhere, and they would lose her as a teacher, and they wanted someone that would be in that position for a long time. So she couldn't get a job as a teacher, and she ended up living with her sister in Los Angeles and waiting tables until I got back from Vietnam.
Wow. So she's doing that. She's waiting. You're there. And when you get to Vietnam, what's that like for you in the role that you were playing? What was it like daily for you?
Oh, the daily operation, there's two things that have to be protected in a war zone. One is food and the other is ammunition. Most of we attack dog handlers were sent to either a food yard or a ammo dump. Some were sent to helicopter pads, and our job was to protect the interior of whatever we had been assigned to. Generally, there was a lot of concertina wire around every facility, and our job was if anybody got through the perimeter, then we were to put our dog on them, attack them. Wow. The dogs were really efficient. We had drugs were a big problem in Vietnam. Many, many soldiers used drugs. And frequently, like at the ammo dump in Pleiku, that was guarded by 24 attack dogs. It was a huge, huge ammo dump. And the dopers would get together and have a pot party and not guard their given area. And those of us that didn't use drugs would periodically go through that post just because we knew somebody wasn't working it. And we had an occasion where there were four sappers. These are North Vietnamese soldiers with backpacks filled with plastic explosives. And if they get through, they throw the plastic explosives into the ammo dump and blow the whole thing up. And the dog handler caught four of them coming out of the last row of concertina wire. And his dog killed all four of them before any of them could throw a satchel charge into the ammo dump.
Wow.
That's how quick they were. Very efficient.
Wow, no kidding. You told me a story, too, that was fascinating about a little boy who became sort of your secret weapon by telling you when there was going to be attacks. Tell the listeners a story about how you met him.
Sure. I was guarding a food yard. And again, my orders are anybody that comes through the concertina wire, I am to put the attack dog on whoever that is. It was dusk, just the sun had just gone down. And I saw this little boy, he was 8 years old, come through the last row of concertina wire, and he went directly to a garbage barrel, pulled out a rotten apple and shoved the whole apple into his mouth and just chewed and swallowed as fast as he could. And my orders were to attack that kid. Well, I couldn't do it. You know, I told you before, I'm a Christian, and one of the principles that I live by is Jesus Christ said to treat other people the way you'd want to be treated yourself. Well, I wouldn't want to be attacked if I was starving to death. My problem was if an officer had seen me not turn my dog loose on that boy, I could have been court-martialed. But I looked around. I didn't see anybody else. I knew enough Vietnamese that I spoke with the little boy and found out where he lived. And then I told him, you get out of here. Don't you ever come back. And at the end of my duty time, I would take a loaf of bread or a can of peaches or something, and when we drove by that little boy's home, I'd just shove it out the side of the truck. And I did this for quite a while and never thought too much about it until one night the little boy showed up at my bunker or at my barracks and said, GIB in bunker at 8 o'clock tonight. And I didn't know exactly what to think, but at 8 o'clock we started getting rocketed. And from that point on, that little boy warned me of every single attack that was to come, and he knew it before our Army intelligence knew it. And very simply, I was taking care of him, and he was taking care of me.
Yeah, wow, what a great story. And then, of course, there's a story, and we're speaking to Lee Halverson, Concatchers, A Soldier's Memories of Vietnam. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, about the orphanage and how you had so many of your men eventually that helped you with the orphanage and what that was like. And that story came about because of these popcorn bombs and a baby crying, and that led you to creating these this orphanage. What happened there, and what was that like for you to see what it did to the men?
Well, when I took the baby to the orphanage had been damaged by mortar fire. And I when I married Jenny, I gave her my vow. I would be faithful to her. Now, most soldiers on a day off like to go downtown and get drunk and have some female companionship. And I didn't do that because I was going to be faithful to Jim. So on my time off, I went to the orphanage and started repairing it. I put in windows and fixed doors and siding and whatever it took. And one by one, the other guys in my company said, you know what? Dad, they called me Dad. I think my time would be better spent helping you at the orphanage than going downtown. And in time, most of my company all went to the orphanage on our time off. And all of these guys, it took one or two little kids that, in their mind, these are my kids. I remember one, his name was Arturo Wilhelmino Policelli. He's from the Bronx. He was a member of the Sicilian Army back home. He had to carry six knives on him, but old time. He picked a little boy that had been hit in the face with napalm. And the napalm had burned off his ears, his nose, his lips, his eyelids. It made you want to vomit just to look at him. He was horribly, horribly harmed. And Art would hold that little boy and cradle him and hum a song. It was just beautiful.
Wow. Wow, so many stories like this in this fascinating book. What do you hope people take away from reading Concatchers?
Well, at least my experience so far in this is I have had wives of ex-Vietnam veterans call me crying and saying, you know, my husband wouldn't say a word about what happened to him in Vietnam. But I got this book and I read it and I read some of your stories to him and now he's talking like a magpie. And we're closer now than we have ever been, and I just wanted to call you and thank you. And the other is I've had parents call me and say, I want my kid to read this book. I want him to, or her, to adopt the principles that you lived by. Would you come to our church and do a book signing? So I've been asked to go to quite a number of churches where I have done a book signing, answer people's questions. It's been a very enjoyable experience.
Yep, you're having an impact, I would say, Lee. And we're out of time. People have to go and get this book, and they'll hear more of these stories. But what a big heart, what a wonderful story. Lee, thank you.
You're more than welcome.
Hi, this is Kate Delaney. I am truly amazed by this audience. Many of you have been reaching out to me to ask more on what I call the No Drone Zone. How do you find out about the show or listen to podcasts or guests or even my books? So here we go. Go to katedelaneyradio.com for more on what's shaking in my orbit. To reach me, simply hit the contact tab and send an email. Behind the scenes photos, great video, travels, the dog. Yeah, that's Guinness. He is the mascot. Go to Kate Delaney fan page on Facebook, Kate Delaney fan page on Facebook, or hit me up on Twitter at Kate S. Delaney, at Kate S. Delaney. For any of my books, including Deal Your Own Destiny, Amazon simply is the easiest. Thanks for listening as we talk about what's happening in my backyard and yours and how it affects us. We throw in laughs, cheap movie reviews, the man cave, and authors with some interesting stories to tell. If you've already forgotten everything I've just said, just go to katedelaneyradio.com.
Do you know someone with a drug or alcohol problem? Get help now. Insurance may cover everything. Stop the drug and alcohol nightmare. Call 800-284-0523. Learn how through the Family Medical Leave Act, you can leave your job without losing your job. Locations everywhere. Get immediate help for drug and alcohol problems. Call now. 800-284-0523. 800-284-0523.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
On America Tonight. I'm pleased to take you to Australia for a conversation with Robert Phillips. He's written a book called 2100. He actually has another book out too. We're going to briefly talk about that because that sounds just as fascinating to me as you fast forward into the future. So, Robert, thanks so much for coming on.
You're welcome.
Let's talk about why you wrote this book. You're an aviation risk analyst. You did that for a big chunk of your life. And obviously, you had an interest in science fiction and things that are futuristic, and also in writing, because you know how to tell a really fine story. So how did that start?
Well, the storytelling started when I was about 4 or 5, writing stories, I think. But what inspired me with this one was wondering what society would be like in the future, and the process of writing was a long one. It went through quite a few revisions till eventually I settled on the book as it is now, set in 2100, and speculating on what life could be like at that time, the end of this century.
Yeah, and what do you think life is going to be like as you speculate about that?
Well, I'm working on a philosophy, which may be something of an article of faith. I believe that things never turn out quite as well as you hope, nor as badly as you fear. example, with global warming and the danger of reaching a 2-degree tipping point, I'd say we'll get close to the 2-degree mark and we'll hover on the edge and just manage to avoid the catastrophic changes, although we'll still suffer serious problems. So I think along the way there'll be a price to be paid, and then I think the economy will eventually disintegrate, and that people will have to fall back on their own resources, or more particularly on forming themselves into communities and pooling their resources to survive for some of that time. But I think what might eventually happen if they live in a community-oriented lifestyle for some years and realise there are certain psychological benefits in that is that even when better times return, they might elect to still stay with a community-oriented lifestyle, and that the prevailing ethos of society will have changed from maximising wealth to earning as much as you need, but otherwise concentrating on being part of your community or pursuing artistic or other pursuits. So that it will become lifestyle-oriented.
Yeah, it's interesting because let's talk about your novel and that character, James Lawson, and what happens to him, and tell us a little bit about his journey.
Well, in many ways, he epitomizes the prevailing ethics of these days. Various reasons he wants to maximize his wealth. And initially, he's actually skeptical about climate change because it didn't fit in with his worldview of his economy getting bigger and better and so on, until he discovered he could make money out of dealing with it, in his case by running an energy efficiency company and so on. And he became a believer. But in many ways, he did sort of epitomize the spirit of the age, so to speak. But then he's struck down with a brain tumour, and he goes into hibernation for many years and has revived in 2100, and then finds himself in this very different type of society, which is far more community rather than profit-oriented. It's about how he has to adjust to this strange new world he finds himself in.
And so he's in this strange new world, and you can't tell us everything because I certainly want people to get the book 2100, which, by the way, you can get Robert's book on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. But what do you tell us some of the stories of what is so odd to him when he wakes up, I guess is how I'll put it.
Well, firstly, there's the shock of adjusting to being in a new society. Main change, I think, is when he goes to live in a community of about 200 people. If you can say a street block of about a dozen houses, better turned into a community of a couple of hundred people. They've got their own small houses and a park, and they pool their resources to grow a lot of their food and so on. And so for him, the big surprise is that people aren't just going off doing their own thing. They're all working together. And he discovers there's a reason for that, in that from time to time, climate change does strike. At one stage, there's a severe dust storm sweeps in. Everybody has to pitch in and help covering up gardens and so on, and removing, cutting down on a small windmill they've got and things like that. So there are reminders to him from time to time that climate change is still there and it's still having a severe effect. Another time there are heavy rains and a lot of places are flooded. Other things he does find, technology is an odd mixture. On the one hand, the tires and the cars are quite thin. It's difficult to get rubber. On the other hand, we've got devices like an emotional regulator. It's a small device, a bit like a hearing aid. It's put behind your ear, and it can, to a degree, regulate your emotions to stop you from getting too depressed or agitated. helped him to adjust to society in this world. Another time he and his girlfriend that he meets get caught in a snowstorm in the Australian Alps. They have to take refuge in a ranger's hut and send them a number of home crews come out. There are some dramatic incidents in it, but it's not meant to be a normal adventure novel. It's more about what life could be like living then.
Wow, so interesting. And again, 2100 is the name of the novel that Robert's written. What do you hope people take away from reading your book?
Well, firstly, it was going to entertain. I enjoy reading it. Secondly, consider that there might be other ways we can live our lives. We may need to live them in future. We adapt to the effects of climate change and economic problems and so on. But we need to become more community-oriented. Now again, you hear talk about these preppies. You know, people are going to preparing for the apocalypse or whatever. They normally take themselves off to some remote spot. They won't be the survivors. The survivors will be the ones that organise themselves into communities and pool their resources. That is, I think, at times and teach you what we might have to do.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think you are predicting the future. I do. I don't want to give too much away, and I want to give you time to tell us just a little sneak about your next book. Tell us the name of the other book that you have out and a little bit about what that's about.
Oh, that's on Amazon also. That's also set in Canberra's future. It's called Canberra S. That's also in a sort of post-apocalyptic world. The apocalypse is when the bad thing happens. The post-apocalypse is when the survivors pick up the pieces. The interesting thing is what happens after that. When things start to improve and people from various communities start to link with each other, it's based in a Canberra setting where they've divided themselves up into lots of small communities, but now, two or three centuries in the future, they're starting to recombine and there are various power struggles. That novel was told in a rather, it's a comedy, told in a rather tongue-in-cheek fashion. But it also shows the benefit of the far-sighted legacy of one man who will help Canberra to recover and reestablish its preeminence.
Yeah.
That one's also on Amazon.
Wow.
Or with both books. You can buy it, goes on our website on robertphillips.com.au, and you can get links from there through to Amazon.
Excellent. Robert, thanks. So fascinating. I think you've hit on some themes that we're definitely talking about these days. And we appreciate you coming on the show on America Tonight.
Oh, I appreciate talking to you, Kate.
Hi, this is Kate Delaney. I am truly amazed by this audience. Many of you have been reaching out to me to ask more on what I call the No Drone Zone. How do you find out about the show or listen to podcasts or guests or even my books? So here we go. Go to katedelaneyradio.com for more on what's shaking in my orbit. To reach me, simply hit the contact tab and send an email. Behind the scenes photos, great video, travels, the dog, yeah, that's Guinness. He is the mascot. Go to Kate Delaney fan page on Facebook. Kate Delaney fan page on Facebook. Or hit me up on Twitter at Kate S. Delaney. At Kate S. Delaney. For any of my books, including Deal Your Own Destiny, Amazon simply is the easiest. Thanks for listening as we talk about what's happening in my backyard and yours and how it affects us. We throw in laughs, cheap movie reviews, the man cave, and authors with some interesting stories to tell. If you've already forgotten everything I've just said, just go to katedelaneyradio.com.